listening to Fox Sports Radio. This is Straight Outta Vegas. With the voice of Vegas, your host, RJ Bell. The pregame show America has always wanted. I doubt the future. I doubt the future. From the Vegas Strip, here's RJ Bell.
Jonas in Los Angeles, and let me start. This isn't the Vegas lead, but you are in LA. You're in the world of sports. Kobe's event today, memorial. You know, we haven't really talked about this since a couple days after that tragedy. What's, you know, pick anything that most struck you with Kobe Bryant and the aftermath?
I think it's just how much it rattled so many well-known people, not just fans, not just, you know, people in the media, but we're talking like well-known celebrity athletes. It really rattled a lot of cages, and it reminds me, and obviously it's different circumstances, but it kind of reminds me of when Steve McNair died, because the circumstances surrounding Steve McNair, a guy that young when he died, it sort of, everybody kind of took a step back and said, geez, it could go at any moment. Like, I mean, even somebody like that in the public eye, somebody famous like that, this kind of is a similar feel to it. Again, different circumstances, but the fact that it happened to Kobe Bryant, so well known, so famous, I think has really rattled a lot of people.
Yeah, I think so. And that's what, again, it's when people pass away and they're not famous. I mean, we all care about that. You know, you obviously want people to have a long, happy life, but you're able to avoid thinking about it, you know, most of the time. And when someone old dies, it's like, yeah, they're old, or someone that smoked. There's always a reason we can say, not us, doesn't apply. Kobe was in better shape than most of us. Maybe not you, but most
no,
of us,
he was.
Well, I figured that, but come on. But and he had all the money in the world. Like, what? How do you protect yourself? And if you say, I want to protect myself in this amoral, random world, you have health, you have wealth, and it didn't matter. And I think that's one of the reasons the tragedy affected everyone so. And for me, lastly, it really struck me that Kobe was a basketball player's basketball player. So in comedy, they say he's a comic's comic. What does that mean? It means, yeah, the crowds think he's funny, but the comics really think he's funny. And Kobe, beloved in L.A., obviously an elite player by any account. You can be a Celtics fan, elite player, but it seems like the players ranked him, valued him even more than the fans. And to be candid, I did not know that. And that was an insight to me, and it was a wonderful thing to see. And obviously his wife has been nothing short of courageous. You know, we don't have any special insight, but we wanted to share a little bit of our thoughts because obviously very important today.
Yeah, and what you mentioned about the comics comic and respected by your peers, it's similar in acting. Gary Oldman is considered an actor's actor. Like, actors in the know look at him and go, that guy's got range. That's a real actor. You may not think it, but that's the guy.
The professional European cut. A great unsung movie.
Yeah. So, RJ, we've got, obviously, on a day in which we've got hand measurements at the NFL Combine, we had a classic game in the NBA on Sunday. What is the Vegas lead here on a Monday?
First off, do not fear. We will get to the hand measurements. But we're in Vegas, baby, straight out of. And The fight this weekend ranks right up there. I've been in Vegas since 98. And let me see here. Yeah, over 20 years. Maybe as big as a fight. If you know, I would say maybe Mayweather-Pacquiao, probably, actually, let's say. And then Mayweather, McGregor.
Yeah.
And then I think this is the third biggest fight, just the feeling this weekend, Las Vegas late.
Yeah, and it was on Fox pay-per-view, and it was Tyson Fury with a seventh-round TKO of Deontay Wilder. Deontay Wilder unbeaten no more.
Yeah, so you, how would you characterize your fandom with boxing?
Oh, I grew up, it's boxing and MMA are my go-tos. I grew up on those, and I got to cover both of those.
Perfect. Why don't you give the recap in your mind of what you saw?
Tyson Fury had a game plan. He was very strategic with his game plan. He came out of that fight last time and said, I'm going to bulk up. I'm going to bulk up the right way. I'm going to change training camps, and I'm going to knock this guy out. And the fact that he went out there, walked right through early big shots from Deontay Wilder, and had a goal in mind. Once he stunned him with that right hand behind the ear and the ear was bleeding, Deontay Wilder never regained his balance. He was never the same fighter after that, and it was only a matter of time.
I tell you, impressive. I mean, Wilder was the favorite in the fight.
Yep.
And in both, a small favorite, but in both fights, the first and second one, the line moved about 50 cents in favor of Wilder. So the bets that move the line actually were on Wilder in both fights. So not only you got to give Fury a ton of credit, but he was bucking the sharps. The biggest money was against him.
Ace Rothstein was a hell of a handicapper.
I can tell you that. I was so good that whenever I bet, I could change the odds for every bookmaker in the country.
Didn't matter, Jonas.
No,
it did not matter.
It didn't. and Tyson Fury put on he gained a lot of weight. And I think people looked at that and said, well, I mean, did he really take this seriously? Because he gained weight, but he gained muscle mass. Like, he looked in better shape actually this time around than he did the first fight. And the first fight, he was 15, 20 pounds lighter.
Well, listen, as Avon Barksdale said, he doesn't like away games. I'm not a boxing expert, so I was listening to some experts, and from all the analysis I heard, the weight gain of Fury was the biggest factor that made me not like Fury in the fight. Because to me, if you're fading in the first fight and you put on 16 pounds, you know, and it didn't look like muscle, and he was kind of covered up and at the weigh-in. And the fact that you saw muscle maybe would have changed my mind. But listen, that's what you got to do to be at the highest level, is make decisions that are not obvious. And it wasn't obvious to me that weight was going to help Fury. But you're right.
Yeah.
It certainly did. Teddy Atlas compared Tyson Fury to Muhammad Ali, talking about him bringing the entertainment and the style in the ring, the personality out of the ring. You know, I think that's fair to say. Obviously, Ali's Ali, but in today's age, Mayweather retired. I mean, who's the second most interesting personality?
I mean, it's Tyson Fury, and then there's a significant drop-off. Maybe a Canelo Alvarez, not for personality, but from a money standpoint. But also, Tyson Fury just headlined a WWE pay-per-view in Saudi Arabia. It's not just that he's boxing and he's putting on great performances. He's completely marketed himself, and at 31 years old, he's still got time to get things done.
Isn't it fascinating? Oh, especially in the heavyweight division where they age slower, right? Where, you know, they're lumbering to start with. So, yeah. So though it's amazing to think Ali, as great as he was when he fought Holmes, I think he was 36. And he looked, you know, he felt, it seemed, and looked ancient. You know, nutrition has certainly changed. I mean, I don't think Ali was eating Spam or anything, but still, I mean, these days, it's amazing. And then you think about Brady, and it's a whole other level. I can't believe this blood. So he licked blood off of Wilder. Yeah. What the heck was that?
Well, I mean, sometimes, you know, heat of the moment, you know, your passion gets the best of you, and you decide, you know, I'm going to lay it on pretty thick here. So he decided he was going to lick blood. Although Deontay Wilder's, I don't want to call them excuses, but they feel like excuses that he came out with earlier today are pretty fascinating. He said that his legs were weakened because the costume that he wore to the ring weighed 45 pounds. So by the time he got to the ring, his legs were already weakened.
Well, it sounds like that was Darwinian. If you're that dumb, you deserve to lose. Now, few of us are going to have a night like Fury did after this fight, where like you can't fathom anything being better. He won all six rounds but on the scorecard before TKO in the seventh. And, you know, I fly into Miami. Someone says, hey, RJ, you want to go to dinner? I'm like, oh, I just had a five-hour flight. I'm going to relax, see you tomorrow. He fought, won, and was in the nightclubs, Jonas, hours later.
Yeah.
And I actually put a little 37-second melody together of Fury at the nightclub.
Who's ready for the f***ing party? I can't hear you! Before we start, I'd like to sing a little song with everybody. Everyone join in. Gypsy King from England. Gypsy King from England. Shut one down. Let's go f***ing mental.
Speaking right, singing this will be the day that I die.
Say what?
This will be the day that I die.
Imagine that.
Yeah. I mean, look, if you're gonna do it, you got to go all the way. I mean, even the entrance was elaborate.
Well, listen, if you win the heavyweight title, you got to play Bye Bye Miss America Pie. I mean,
if
there's anything that's obvious, it's that. By the way, courtesy of TMZ Sports, they seem to be everywhere. All right, so they asked a bunch of heavyweight fighter or a bunch of champions who should Fury fight next. And Anthony Joshua was the pick. What would you see that? We got an early line on it. What would you see? How would you see that fight going?
Oh, I think Tyson Fury would handle him easier than he handled Deontay Wilder. Joshua has always had a little bit of a suspect chin. He got upset by Andy Ruiz and got knocked out there. And then he looked pretty good in the rematch, although Andy Ruiz gained all sorts of bad weight, not the good weight that Tyson Fury gained in their rematch. But Anthony Joshua has been accused of ducking Wilder and Fury. I think Joshua is the third best heavyweight in the world, and I think Tyson Fury takes him.
Foxbet has a line on this one. Odds, Fury minus 250, Joshua plus 200. Remember, Fury was an underdog in this fight against Wilder. But if they fought again, we have projected odds. Fury minus 333
now.
Joshua plus 250. So actually, Fury would be a bigger favorite against Wilder again than he would be against Joshua. So Wilder has lost the luster, I think it's fair to say. But in both those fights, Fury would be, you know, upwards of 70%. So the guy has stepped forward. Obviously, we got another draw in boxing, which we need. So
yeah,
great weekend. It was so hot, energized here in Vegas. Exciting. And the media people that were in, you know, Jones, you're going to have to – next fight, we'll get you a press pass. You're going to have to come.
I'm in. And I know they raised the limits at the blackjack tables for weekends like that. So, you know,
wow.
I'm bringing extra money.
I think then that means you're going to have to go way downtown, not just normal downtown, but like one of the strip clubs that has a couple blackjack tables.
I'll go to Whiskey Pete's if I have to. I got no shame in the game.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. On Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
So RJ, he continued with his impressive start to his rookie season as the Pelicans with a 115-101 win over the Warriors on Sunday night. But the star was Zion Williamson, 28 points, 7 boards for New Orleans.
Yeah, this is unbelievable. And I can't lie, I was a little bit of a skeptic with Zion. And I think you still have to caveat Does he stay healthy? Can he stay healthy? If he can, we might be talking about an all-timer here. So if you just look at his points per game, 23, it's like, okay, 7 rebounds, okay, you know. But if you look at it, first 7 games he played, or check that. Yeah, the first 7, he averaged 19 points a game and 27 minutes. Okay. Average NBA starter, 30 minutes, so he was playing less. Last 5 games, Zion, he's only added 2.5 minutes, 29.4. So less than 30 still. Zion is playing less than an average starter in the NBA, even the last 5 games. And All-Stars, they average about almost 35 minutes a game. So he's well below them. But what's happened is his field goal percentage is up to 63% the last 5 games, Zion. 63%. I mean, that's amazing. He had 5 dunks yesterday in the game against Golden State. It's hard to miss dunks. He has 28 dunks on the season. I mean, pretty amazing. As a fan, Jonas, when you look at, and I got some more stats here, but as you look at Zion, what's your impressions?
I love him, and I love him because he's doing it the quote-unquote hard way. He's only got 12 three-point attempts so far in the season, which means this 23 points per game is actually more impressive because he's going down low to the basket. The game a couple of nights ago, I think I saw a stat, he had 19 points in the first half, and every single one of his field goal attempts was within 3 feet of the basket. So a guy his size, who's significantly shorter than a lot of those guys in the post and down on the low blocks, the fact that he's able to get his points when he wants to, whether it's Whiteside trying to guard him like he was on Friday night, I think makes it even more impressive.
I agree. And if you look at this now, because he's not shooting. He's still not shooting a ton. He's passing the ball very effectively. And if you actually look at the minutes, though, and there's a stat the advanced guys talk about, which is per 36 minutes. So they say, hey, everyone plays different amounts in games. So if one person scores 20 points, the other person scores 20 a game, but one's playing 20% more, well, you got to give credit to the guy that's playing less. So they average out, assuming everyone's playing 36 minutes a game. In the history of the NBA, Zion is the highest scoring rookie ever. 36 minutes per game adjusted. That's from Pro Basketball Reference. Zion number one, 29.3 points a game per 36. Wilt Chamberlain number two. If you're passing Wilt, Jonas,
yes,
doing pretty darn good. By the way, Joel Embiid, number three on that list when he was a rookie. So give him credit there. What's your feeling? And, you know, short answer here, because I am going to, and I'm RJ Bell straight out of Vegas, make the case that this NBA season, and the Pelicans apply to this, in fact, the Pelicans are the exception, this NBA season has less games that really matter. Like 90%+ of the games do not matter. And that sounds like, what? What are you talking about? Do you feel that? Or
yeah,
do you look at the... You do.
I've always felt that. And I think people are...
But no more this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think people came into this season with the idea that now that the Warriors aren't going to have a dominant year because of the injuries, it's going to open wide up and it's going to be anybody's championship. And it still comes back to there's less than a handful of teams that you give a legitimate shot at winning a title. People see that, they recognize it, and I think that's why the ratings have taken a hit.
Yeah, but you would think if there's not a dominant team, that increases interest.
But it feels like there are three dominant teams. It feels like it's Bucks, Lakers, Clippers. Maybe you could bring the Celtics in there if you really had to stretch, but it feels like we know who the best teams are.
Oh, check this out. If you go to 538, which is an analytics site, and you look at the playoff odds, what's the chance of teams making the playoffs? And they got a great model for that. There's 16 playoff teams. 13 of them have over a 99% chance to make the playoffs. 99%. So 13 teams, if you don't care about seeding, and it doesn't seem obvious these teams do, the games don't really matter. They're in. The 14th team, the Magic, 97% chance. The 15th team, the Nets, 91% chance. So 15 of the 16 playoff spots are sewn up by over 90%, with 13 of them 99%. The only competitive spot is the Pelicans, the eighth seed in the West. The Pelicans have a 66% chance. The other team's contenders, only one of them's in double digits. The Blazers, 18%. Then Grizzlies, 8%. Kings, 4%. Spurs, 4%. So how much does seeding matter? I don't think it matters very much. But I don't. Here's what's amazing. The winner or loser of these games, most of them, the teams are either eliminated or locked in the playoffs. There's only a handful of teams these games matter for other than seeding. We know that doesn't really matter that much. But I don't hear people complaining about that. I've never seen a sport that the winner and loser doesn't really matter in the NBA. Because even, you know, we're going to be talking about the Lakers. They beat the Celtics, and it's like, well, it's February. Like, there's something about the NBA that actually transcends winning and losing. Now, Jonas, I have a few thoughts on what it could be, and maybe you got some thoughts. I think the NBA has done an amazing job with the moments. They've been marketing innovators, the NBA, when it comes to viral video and different things, and people want to see those posterized slams. They want to see the threes.
Yeah.
And NBA's done that better than anybody. Number two, there's kind of a lifestyle soap opera. You know, what's LeBron doing? What's Steph doing? And the NFL doesn't really have that. So the NBA has that. And finally, there's an analytical subculture with all the advanced metrics, and they call it NBA Twitter, that has people really, some people very interested. Do you agree with me that the NBA doesn't really seem to suffer that much for these games not really mattering? And it's shocking to the degree that they don't matter at this point.
I think the difference between the NFL and the NBA when it comes to marketing, the NBA markets players, the NFL markets teams. Like, I don't hear anything about, you know, the brand new Chicago Bulls shoes, but I hear about new Jordans. Like, it showcases what the NBA has always done, which is market their superstars. And then you got a bunch of bottom feeder teams that are just trying to get to the lottery and hope they land a big time name in the draft so that they can have something to show their fan base, because chances are a big time free agent's not going to sign in those small markets.
But in a way, isn't what the NBA able to accomplish even more impressive? Because in the NFL, I hear all the time, "Oh, that game doesn't really matter. Two teams are eliminated," or it might be, "Oh, this isn't a great game." In the NBA, it feels like, because of the stars, perhaps, and probably likely, the outcomes don't matter, but the games still interest the fans. I know the fan base is bigger in the NFL, but, man, I mean, would that have shocked you that 15 of the 16 spots – are over 90% and 13 are 99 plus locked up?
It doesn't surprise me. It feels like there's two options in the NBA. Either you're making the playoffs or you're trying not to make the playoffs, and you're just playing for the lottery.
Tankathon.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. All right. So if you have any other ideas, because I've been thinking about this, why the NBA, the outcome, the winners, the losers, regular season games don't seem to matter to the fans, and the fans are okay with it. I think it's interesting. You can tweet me at RJ in Vegas. That's at RJ in Vegas. And anything good, I'll read it on air. In just 1 minute, speaking of NBA regular season, there was a big game, Celtics-Lakers.
And it was a classic yesterday at Staples Center, where the Lakers beat the Celtics 114-112 despite 41 from Jason Tatum.
Yeah, Tatum, a lot of talk about him coming into his own. 18 in the second quarter alone in that game. I mean, Kyrie gone, Tatum's getting better. Could be a coincidence. I don't know. I don't know. I don't think so necessarily. Anthony Davis, double-double, scored 32. Now, that's the 109th time Anthony Davis has had 30-plus points, 10-plus rebounds. It's one behind Tim Duncan. Think about the longevity, Jonas, on Duncan.
Yeah.
And AD is literally tied with 30-point-plus nights, double-digit rebounds. What an amazing stats guy. Let's give him credit. Stats guy. But Colin Cowherd right here in FSR made a great point earlier. Anthony Davis is averaging only 4 points in the fourth quarter per game. 4 points in the fourth quarter. Now, some people might be smart, but not really, and say, yeah, but RJ's not playing as many minutes in the fourth. It's true. He's not. First of all, why not? Well, that's the question. Are the Lakers going to be able to win with just LeBron being reliable down the stretch in the playoffs? Maybe, but boy, I'd rather have AD getting his reps in the fourth. But the rotation right now has him playing a big chunk of the third quarter and not playing much of the fourth. I don't understand that. Obviously, there's some reason for it, but I don't think it trumps getting AD reps with the game on the line. And yeah, he's playing less minutes, but he's only shooting 40%, Anthony Davis, in the fourth quarter, over 50% the other three quarters. Something he struggles in the fourth quarter. And as Colin said, we've seen a team with a healthy, dominant Anthony Davis. It was the Pelicans, and they had zero playoff series wins. It's time to change something. It's not just about the stats. But listen, during the regular season, I mean, the Lakers are playing hard every night. Amazing regular season. You know, Jonas, LeBron, 29, 8 assists, 8 rebounds, almost a double or triple-double. Talk about Anthony Davis. Check this stat out. LeBron James has more assists to Anthony Davis, so he throws it to Anthony, just past the All-Star break than any player he's ever played with.
Wow.
For a full season. So those two are really, really synced up, and give them credit. But again, I don't understand the fourth quarter with Anthony Davis at all. What was your main impression?
I mean, the game was awesome. It's one of those rare occurrences where I think both teams won, because the Lakers won the game, which mattered most. But if you're a Celtic, you came away from that going, no Kemba Walker, and we had them on the ropes, on the road, in their building, with everybody watching on national TV. I think both teams, both fan bases should be excited about the future.
You know, I think that's fair. And I also think, I mean, the Celtics in general have played really well under Stevens against good teams.
Yeah.
And they tend to step up with those kind of games. Like right now, other than Milwaukee, if you could have anyone else in the East to go to the title round, who would it be?
Boston. I don't trust Philadelphia. I think they're dysfunctional.
It's not even close.
Yeah, I think Philly's dysfunctional. Now Ben Simmons has got a back issue that's popped up. And I know Toronto's a great story. I just don't know in the postseason who you can rely on now that Kawhi's gone to get you a bucket late.
Amazing stats from LeBron the whole season, amazing effort. But again, I just don't understand how the Lakers win this thing. Even though the Clippers are not having a great run here, I don't understand how they win it with just LeBron at LeBron's age. Because we've seen just LeBron too, quite frankly. And I know they have Anthony Davis, but the fourth quarter is the most important quarter.
And they miss a lot of free throws late. Like, that's got to come back to bite you at some point. The Lakers miss a lot of free throws late.
Think about the title they won, or LeBron has won in the last 5 years. It came down to, you know, give Kyrie credit. He made that shot against Golden State, but literally it was a one-possession game. Yep. Against the best teams. That's usually the way it is in the deciding games.
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Outta Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
So the big story out of the combine, the early stages of the combine in Indianapolis, is the hand size 9 inches. Again, I must reiterate, hand size 9 inches for Joe Burrow up from LSU.
Hand size.
Yes, hand size.
You ever hear the Aerosmith song? I got the great big 10-inch record of my favorite blues.
I have not heard that, no.
Tell John Ramos Ramos, can he pull that up?
Yeah, let's see. We'll see. John, can
Maybe
you pull
we'll
that record
interlude.
Up?
Let me check.
All right.
Thanks. All right. So this is funny, but it's not. Check this out and lean back. I'm gonna try to eliminate a lot of the numbers here, but some are necessary. So 9-inch hand size measurement. No first-round QB in the last dozen years. So first-round quarterback for 12 drafts has had a smaller hand size than Burrow. And there's been 35 quarterbacks picked in the first round. So literally there's three that's number 33, 34, and 35 when it comes to hand size, and Burrow's in that group. The other two, Jared Goff, 9-inch hand size, Ryan Tannehill, 9-inch hand size. Hey, Tannehill, maybe there's a little cause for optimism. That's a club I'm not anxious for my number one overall pick to join, is Jared Goff and Ryan Tannehill. And remember, no first-round quarterback has had smaller hands than Burrow for a dozen years. Now, you might say, yeah, RJ, first-round guys, they tend to be physically imposing. What about all the first or other quarterbacks with the little tiny hands? Well, if you use the metric 300 career passes, now listen, if you throw 30 times a game, that's 10 games. That's not much to have 300 career passes. In the last decade, there's only been three guys with hand size of 9 inches with 300 plus passes. One, Tannehill, two, Goff, three, Chad Henne. Another group I don't want my number one pick being a part of. So no quarterbacks, or hardly any with the hands as small as Burrow, excel. Now, what about the other quarterbacks, right? Average in the NFL, 9 inches and 7/10. So the difference here is 7/10 of an inch. Tua, about 10 inches hand size. Justin Herbert, 10 inches. So above average, each of them. Kyler Murray, small guy, right? I towered over him at the Super Bowl, and I'm only like 5'10 and a half, 9.5 inches, so bigger hand size than Burrow. Kyle Allen, we affectionately call him Flipper Allen because of his small hands, 9 3/4 or 3/8 inches. Now, here's the other great quarterbacks in recent draft choices. Aaron Rodgers, Sam Darnold, 9.4. Lamar Jackson, Baker Mayfield, Trubisky, 9.5. Deshaun Watson, 9.75. Kirk Cousins, Big Ben, 9.9. Carson Wentz, 10. Peyton Manning, Hall of Famer, 10.1. Drew Brees, gigantic hands, 10.25. Russell Wilson, 10.25. Brett Favre, 10.4 inches hand size. Dak Prescott, 10.9. I mean, imagine 10.9 versus 9. I mean, Cowboy, I think he deserves $35 million.
It's like the Andre the Giant Bob Uecker when he puts his hands around his neck and starts choking him.
The only quarterbacks in memory that's been any good with hands 9 inches or smaller, Tony Romo, 8.9, undrafted, though. And Michael Vick, and Romo obviously overcame it. Vick, as a number one pick, probably fell a little short. But I tell you, I don't know how you just ignore this, Jonas, because history, this isn't some goofy thing. This is literally history telling us that hand size this big doesn't do, or this small doesn't do well in the NFL.
No, it's a big deal. I actually got to meet Scott Pioli, former GM executive in the NFL, at the Super Bowl week in Miami. And I was talking with Brady Quinn, and Scott Pioli was there. And to this day, you ask Scott Pioli any player, and Brady kind of threw him on the spot. You ask him any player from a previous draft, he can tell you what his hand size is. Like, it's a big deal. Like, they remember those things because it does have an impact.
So you were hanging out with the, you know, Heisman finalist,
yes,
and the famous GM?
Yeah, yeah, and I was there.
Welcome to Mirage, Mr. Papa Giorgio.
So, Mr. Ramos Ramos, we got that?
Yeah, John,
let's do it.
It.
All right, let's do it.
All right, here we go. He went to the record store for this, by the way.
She just loved my big 10-inch record of a favorite blues.
Hey, Aerosmith, baby. Last thing, Jonas. The Bucks clinched the playoffs on pace to be the third team ever to have 70 wins.
Yeah.
Obviously, the Golden State team, obviously the Bulls. Of teams that have 67 wins in a season, how many of them win the NBA championship? 9 of 13. So you're over about 70% chance historically to win the title if you win 67 or more games. The Bucks are on pace to win 70 games. They also have a point differential that puts them in rarefied air when it comes to winning and losing. And remember, Fezzik had the best bet, a rare future bet, on the Milwaukee Bucks to win the title, plus 275.